Say hi to spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.
Welcome to Golden State of Mindcast, the midsummer edition. This is Ivan, joined by Andy and Evan. So you haven't heard from us in a good long time, but there's just so much to talk about right now. So we had to get a crew together for a little roundtable. This is a Friday night. We're recording this on a Friday night, so you know we're dedicated here for you guys. And you know I want to jump right in first to the big news of the day. I think you guys know what I'm going to talk about. That's right, the Golden State Warriors came up victorious against the Charlotte Hornets in Game 1 of the Vegas Summer League, and keeping the undefeated streak alive. Anybody? Not the big news that you maybe wanted me to talk about. So 70-58 was the final score. I didn't get a chance to watch that. But
Did you guys even watch that game?
I was at work, man.
How did James
Michael...
Oh, no,
me too. I didn't watch it.
McAdoo ended with 11 points, 3 rebounds, 4 fouls, 4 turnovers, 4-7 shooting, 26
hey,
minutes.
Actually, I looked at the box score and I saw that Aaron Kraft had 4 assists and 5 steals. Sounds good.
Yep.
Somebody said he can't shoot. Somebody said he can't shoot. I think he's perfect for us.
Zing. Nedovic with 17 points, 1 assist, 5 rebounds, no turnovers. But from all accounts in the Golden State of Mind, game thread, Nedovic looked pretty good. Onion Kuzmic with 8 rebounds. Amusingly, NBA.com has his name misspelled as Juzmic. So still not hitting the big time for Onion. But, you know, nice start, it sounds like, with the 8 rebounds in 20 minutes. Only 3 fouls, 4 points, 2 or 3 shooting. I don't know, nothing much to look at for the Hornets. Vonleh had a terrible game, went for 0-13, which is really not what you want out of your lottery pick, but you know, everybody knows that he's raw and this is game one of Summer League, so who really cares? Let's stop talking about that, in fact, because there is much more pressing things to discuss today. Obviously the big news, LeBron James going back to the Cleveland Cavaliers after four years, I don't even remember what it was now, with the Heat, I think it was 4 years, signing again for the Max in Cleveland. All is forgiven, apparently. All those fans who burned their jerseys, I don't know what they're just going to have to shell out some new cash. Anybody have any gut reaction, thoughts of that? Andy?
Oh, well, about the new jersey, I saw a picture on Twitter earlier. Some guy was wearing a LeBron jersey. It was at a baseball game, and it was burned. It was like tattered little pieces, and I mean, he was wearing it. So, I guess that's what they're doing in Cleveland. But as for the I woke up, got that reaction right away. First thing I thought of was, man, the guy controls the entire league, doesn't he? Like, the moment he chose Cleveland, it was Pat Riley was going to work right away. He had Bosch done in a couple hours. I mean, the Daryl Morey thing was pretty much the funniest thing of the day for me.
Yeah, definitely.
It was ridiculous. Like, he flipped Lynn. I believe he gave away a first-round pick, too, just to get rid of that contract. Is he still going to do that Oshik trade? It looks like he is. So it looks like they're flipping both those guys just to sign Bosch, but because LeBron chose Cleveland and I guess they thought they were going to get him, and it didn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, and Bosch ends up going back to Miami, of course, once they can offer the max. Kind of a questionable, I'm not sure what all of his motivations were on that, since he was potentially getting the max from a much better team, but you know, now he has a chance for a much bigger role in Miami.
He got,
for sure.
He got 5 years, right? He could only get 4.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's got the extra year.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, good for him, you know.
And
go for the money when you can.
He got the money, and he'll be the man in Miami, and I think they have a chance to make the playoffs, and he's going to have a huge season.
Yeah, he's going to have much more of a featured role, that's for sure. And we know that he can play that role as he did for the Raptors for so many years, and they're definitely going to rely on him much more. I don't know what I don't think anybody knows exactly what that team is going to shape up like, and it looks like they're looking at Luol Deng. They're looking at Trevor Ariza to fill that new hole at small forward. I don't think that either of those guys are going to fill the hole that LeBron James leaves.
Do they keep McRoberts? What happened
and
there?
They signed McRoberts. Yeah,
right.
I guess they could. I don't remember what the trade rules are. Whether they have to wait till December to trade him, or can they flip him right away?
I don't think they even have to sign it if they don't have to.
I think it's signed already.
Yes. Is it? Oh.
I mean, why wouldn't they want to keep him? He's like $5 million, and they can play 4 or 5. Bosch. I mean, I think it's gonna be a good lineup.
It's not a. Yeah. It's. I think a lot of basketball Twitter, at least, a lot of columnists and bloggers were kind of questioning whether that was a great contract, great value. Evan, I know that you're a bit more of a fan of McBob than others. So you think that was a good contract for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think people don't look far enough ahead. I mean, the guy shot 36%. From three last season, that was like basically his first season. He started taking three pointers. It's already better than Barnes and Green. I mean, he's a hustle guy. You know, he's okay defensively.
Good passer.
He's pretty young. He's like 27, and you got him for like $5 million. I would have loved McRoberts on that contract.
Well, it certainly made more sense when you think you're bringing back LeBron James. I think that he's still a nice piece to have, and I wonder if they would have rather saved that money and gone after a bigger fish. Now that they don't have the opportunity to re-sign, all of their free agents and LeBron. And I don't know what Dwayne Wade's going to do. There's talk about him going to Chicago, but again, it really depends on the money. I think at this point. He left a lot of money on the table, so whether or not the Heat offer him that money back is kind of an interesting question. I think it's funny that somehow we started LeBron James and immediately went into other topics. What do you guys think the Cavs are looking like now? I mean, they have a really interesting team. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
One thing I wanted to say about LeBron, the thing that surprised me, I mean, the whole thing is, obviously relatively surprising, but I thought he was going to take a 2-year deal because of the whole cap thing, the new TV contract. So I was surprised that he committed to 4 years.
But I think the main thing is that team that he's playing with is so young. He said in his essay that there wasn't a good chance that they're going to win a championship right now. And he pretty much admits it, which was a little odd, but he says it anyway. It kind of alleviates him of some pressure. Nobody's going to think he's going to come back and immediately win several championships. But they get, I believe they get the Heat's first-round pick next year. And it doesn't look like the Heat are tanking, so it should be somewhere a decent pick. And if they don't trade Wiggins for Love, which I don't know what, we hope they don't, right? So I think that's a pretty young team that could be pretty good in 2-3 years. It could work out for them. I mean, it'll be fun now. It is the East. It wouldn't surprise any of us if they do make a finals again.
Yeah, I mean, well, now you've got a little more. You're right that there's no kind of guarantee coming out of the East. And last year it was obviously Miami or the Pacers, and this year now you're looking at the Heat are still going to be a decent team, assuming that they have Bosch and a couple other pieces back in the fold. I don't know if they're going to be a possible contender. I mean, you look at the Cavs, and they have the best player in the world and, two very young pieces, a couple of other really good guys. They could contend right away. I don't know if they're not going to win it. They're not going to beat somebody from the West, but who knows? They can certainly be up there in the East.
So, I mean, yeah, they won 33 games, and you had a guy who basically won 25 games.
Right.
On his own. So that's like almost 60 right there.
I don't know what kind of a factor that Wiggins is going to play right away. And from that standpoint, it does become a little tempting for Griffin and the Cavs to start looking at potential trades for somebody like Kevin Love. Evan, do you think there's any chance that they try that trade, Wiggins for Love, or do you think there's no chance in heck?
I think they're crazy. That's even a better trade for them than us trading Clay. Like, Clay is a better – he's obviously better than Wiggins, and you – I mean, Wiggins could be – he could be Nick Batum. Like, yeah, he might be great, but you can't just – like, I would not assume – he'd be great. I didn't even really like him in his only year. I know he's athletic. I've heard that one before. He can't handle the ball. So yeah, you could get Kevin Love for Wiggins, and they don't want to do that. That's insane.
What do you think, Andy?
Well, it's even. Well, I mean, it depends on Saunders, right? I mean, if I were him, I would take Wiggins in a heartbeat over Clay. But that's because you're gonna be paying Clay close to 16, 17 million a year. And
yeah,
he's
a lot sooner, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And he's about maxed out, I think, from where he's going to be as a player going forward. I mean, I like Wiggins more than Evan does. But, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense what he's doing. If he wanted to rebuild, he should have taken Boston's deal of like 10 first rounders or whatever they were doing. But it looks like he wants to contend in a West that's getting even more competitive with a nucleus of David Lee and Clay and, like, Harrison Barnes with Ricky Rubio, I guess. Not really sure what he's doing, but I guess if he can get back Waiters, Wiggins, and I believe Tristan Thompson is what they were saying.
And maybe
two
first-rounders or something like that, yeah.
So they can offer two. Yeah, so that's, I mean, that's even better than what, I mean, I'd say that's better, and you could keep your cap space, but, you know, who knows with what Minnesota's doing. Doesn't really make sense.
Well, what do you guys think now that all of these moves have been made of the Warriors' chances getting Love? I mean, I think that it's still been on the table. I'm not one of these people that have believed everything that I've read about, about what Myers has proclaimed that they're not going to trade Clay. I find it very difficult to believe they would take him off the table completely. And I think that it's all been posturing and just hardline negotiating, because up to this point, it's there hasn't really been another offer that's been out there that makes a lot of sense for Saunders. I mean, do you think that any of the kind of changes today affect the outlook for the Warriors?
I think the other big contender at some point was Houston, right? And I think now that doesn't look very plausible, does it? I mean, would they trade for Parsons? Actually, they can't even get Parsons, right? Because Dallas is going to get him.
Right, right.
Yeah, if they match Parsons' contract, or the contract that Dallas offered Chandler Parsons, I don't believe they can then turn around and trade him until December 15th. So they either let Parsons go, and then they have cap space. But what are they going to do?
He's not a free agent. So
right.
So they could attempt to do a big trade with give him a traded player exception, take him into their space and give some other some other pieces. I don't really know what else
they don't have anything left. No, so I think it's good. I mean, I think Houston's out of it, and I think Chicago is looking at Melo, right? So I honestly think it's between us and Cleveland at this point. That's good.
Do you think that somebody like the Celtics comes back in? I don't know if they – I don't believe they used any of their pieces.
I think if the Celtics was going to happen, it would have happened with the picks. They made picks. You know, like, if you're going to trade for picks, you want to have those picks and not see the other team, you know, make the picks already, right? Because maybe they wouldn't have taken Marcus Smart or whatever. I mean – I felt like on draft day that Boston was out of it, because that trade would have already happened.
Yeah, I mean, it comes back down to what Andy said. I mean, what is Saunders really thinking, and what their overall strategy is of whether they want to rebuild, or they want to try to obviously not contend, but put a competitive team on the floor. I don't. At this point, there's just so many teams at the top,
or that, you know, nobody's really gotten worse except for maybe Houston if they lose Parsons. They've actually lost Ashik, and they've also lost Lynn now. Okay, they got worse.
I think they got worse.
I think they did too. They still have some, you know, there's got to be a move or two there. They've got to sign somebody.
I think
that
Portland really went sideways. I mean, they got Kamen and Steve Blake.
Right. Those Los Angeles Lakers stalwarts, they kept the bench warm there for a while. And yeah, that was puzzling to me as well. They didn't seem to get any better. Mo Williams is, I think, not re-signed yet either. And after watching Steve Blake on the Warriors last year, I would not count on him to go in and fill the role of Mo Williams right away. Let's see, what other changes?
I think the big piece out there is Gasol. So it's, you know, San Antonio. I mean, come on, it's ridiculous what San Antonio is potentially doing this offseason. They win a championship, they re-sign everybody, and they might add Paul Gasol.
Yeah.
And they draft Kyle Anderson.
Well, hey, they're getting older. One of these, this is what I said last summer, I think, when we talked about, you know, the outlook of the West. I said, oh, the Spurs, they've got to get old at some point, right? And joke that we say that every year, and then they go on and win the championship, of course. So, you're right. They've kind of been very much under the radar and just gotten a little better.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, though. It's weird that I want to see Gasol on that team because that's pretty much the pinnacle of what they're trying to build or what they've already built, actually. And it's less of a worry if you're a Warriors fan because, well, if you're a Warriors fan, you don't want to see Houston get Bosch because then, I mean, they'd be a markedly better team than the Warriors. But the Warriors, with or without Love, I argue that they probably wouldn't beat the Spurs anyway, at least not this year.
Right.
So that's less of a concern. And I mean, if Houston had gotten Bosch, now that would have been something. But you know,
yeah, that was big news for the Warriors. Houston not getting Bosch kind of you know, helps them not move in front of. I mean, that's just a great team. He would have been the best fit for them out of any of the potential free agents. You know that they can't go after Gasol because you know that we've seen Howard and Gasol, so that's off the table. And Gasol, one of the other suitors for Gasol, of course, is the Thunder, who are already above us.
Oof.
So it's looking pretty good for Pau Gasol. He seems to have gotten a raw deal the last few years in LA. So I kind of do hope that he signs for the Spurs or the Thunder.
Yeah. And the Bulls apparently are looking at him.
And it was, you know, hey, I want to see the Bulls jump back too. If Derrick Rose can finally stay healthy and they get Pau Gasol and or Carmelo Anthony, I mean, that's an interesting team in the East that suddenly, you know, now that there's no that the Miami is not as clear of a front runner, and we don't really know about the Cavs yet until we see them play. I mean, obviously they're going to be great because they have the greatest player, but, you know, still, we just have to see him play first. The Bulls could certainly, you know, be in the top two by midseason. Mm-hmm. Isaiah Thomas, of course, going to the Phoenix Suns, 4 years, $27 million. Evan, Thomas was one of your favorites, and actually, you know, most of basketball fans kind of puzzled by the Kings not keeping him, really clearly not wanting him, and going so far as to facilitate a sign-and-trade where they really don't get anything back for him.
Yeah, they're – I don't understand the Kings. I mean, really, I think the teams I like – I mean, you know, Phoenix, it sucks that we're going to have to compete with them, but yeah, I think they're doing things the right way. I mean, they're focusing on talent. You know, they let Fry go. I mean, they, you know, Fry got overpaid. I like Fry, but he got way overpaid. You know, stockpiling point guards. This is not Khan in Minnesota. This is like three good guards. I mean, they're going to be assets. You know, like people are talking about logjam. I mean, it's not a logjam when you have three guys who can play point guard, and you know, I mean, Bledsoe can play either position. Dragic plays either position.
Right.
I would have loved Isaiah Thomas.
And Thomas sounds like, you know, from what I've read, he's totally fine being a sixth man there, coming off the bench. And so that was never totally the issue. The issue was that the Kings had him as a starter, and they tried to replace him as a starter a bunch of times, and he outplayed all of the other players, and they still didn't want to bring him back. And it's really a puzzling situation there, to the point where Thomas is willing to be a bench guy just for a team that wants him and is willing to pay him a reasonable amount for his talent.
And it's odd that I don't know. There's so many other teams that could use Isaiah Thomas. Like, I don't even, not even as a backup, but as a starter.
Right.
I mean, you've got Brandon Jennings, Brandon Knight. You got guys like that starting, you know, it doesn't make sense. In Sacramento, you know, they basically traded away Vasquez, Patterson, who, I love those guys. Patterson probably got arguably the best signing of the offseason to me was Patrick Patterson. I think Toronto did really well getting Lowry for $12 million, Patterson, and keeping Vasquez, and they got that Brazilian kid who has like a 10-foot wingspan or whatever it is. Crazy.
Right.
But I just don't understand the market for Thomas. I mean, you see guys like that, and it's like the only knock. I mean, he's an inch and a half shorter than Ty Lawson. Ty Lawson gets $12 million a year, you know, and everybody thinks he's great. So, and you know, you guys watch the Kings and the Warriors, Curry has a hell of a time scoring on Thomas. Like,
he was one of the worst matchups for Curry all season.
I mean, he scored, the first game he scored, I think, 34, but this, like, the next two he scored 13. Thomas was tough.
And visibly frustrated, too. I mean, he got into Curry's airspace as well as anybody, better than most, maybe even partially because of his size. But, yeah, he played him very hard, and, yeah, you don't see Curry that frustrated that often, and it was certainly
happening. I tweeted this today, Curry's going to hate playing Phoenix. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's either Bledsoe or Thomas defending him. And even Dragic is one of those pesky defenders. He really gets under guys' skin.
And he's going to have to pick up one of those guys, right? Because Clay can't guard both guards. So,
well,
you're going to have, like, Isaiah Thomas and Dragic or Bledsoe, that's going to be tough.
They're going to have to do a little Thompson Livingston, and that won't even matter. You still have to guard a third guy. But what I was thinking was, when they first signed him, was they could be in the Kevin Love thing too. I totally forgot about this earlier, but they can essentially flip Eric Bledsoe, who's in a restricted free agent. I mean, they probably won't. From everything they said, they're going to re-sign him. But if they don't, they've got Bledsoe, they've got a couple other young players, Plumlee, and they got two firsts next year. I mean, that's probably the best
Morris
package, right? Yeah, right. They got the Morris twins. I believe Markieff is the better one.
You have to trade them together, though, right? I don't think we can split up the Morris twins ever again.
They were actually really good last year.
They actually play a lot better together than they do alone.
Really?
And they've got Tyler Ennis, the young guard that they drafted as well. Phoenix, clearly they're better than they were last year too, which is kind of scary. And they were a surprise team last season. Horonchek did a great job coaching that team. So that starts worrying you as Warriors fans too, especially not having seen really, you know, much, if any, improvement yet in our team.
Well, I mean, that to me, the thing, I mean, we haven't talked about this, is Dallas. So basically, Dallas adds Tyson Chandler, and they might get Parsons. I mean, that's a huge influx of talent.
Yeah, their team is definitely changing a bit, and they lost Carter, obviously, is gone, and Sean Marion, I don't know if he's signed with anybody. He probably at the end of his career, nearly. Of course,
Calderon.
What's that?
Calderon, yeah.
Oh, Calderon, yeah, they lost Calderon and replaced him with Felton, which, you know, I can't imagine the Dallas fans are too happy with that.
Basically, Monte's going to be the point guard, right?
Woo!
I'm telling you, they get Parsons, Dallas is going to be in there for the 5 or 6 seed. That's my prediction right now.
They have a lot of money left to go. They can still spend on somebody. I don't know who they're going to get, but I think that they, you know, they still have some openings there, some stuff to work with. Some other kind of random signings today, Nick Young and Jordan Hill returning to the Lakers, so we see where the Lakers are headed. They actually ended up spending a ton of money on those guys. Not getting better yet, and probably potentially conceding that they're not going to get Carmelo Anthony would be my guess.
Yeah, well, short deals, I guess, works for them. Swaggy P was 4 years, but Jordan Hill, a couple years, the player option for the second year.
Right.
I guess they're just trying to go through this two-year, just ridiculous Kobe contract, kind of trying to get over that so they can clean out the cap sheet for 2016, right?
I think that's the Kevin Durant summer.
Yes, that's the master plan for them. So,
let's see, we had Vince Carter going to the Memphis Grizzlies. Not too interesting there. Mike Miller leaving the Grizzlies likely to go to the Cavs upon the request of King James. Seems to be a favorite of LeBron's, but that signing hasn't actually happened. And then, of course, former Warriors point guard Kent Bazemore, it was point guard for us, unfortunately. Kent Bazemore going to the Hawks today for 2 years, $4 million. I mean, Bazemore was the only one that we would be interested in and possibly potentially bringing back this season as a 3-and-D guy was what my hopes would be. And I think 2 years, $4 million is it's a nice salary for him. It's certainly a raise and really a reasonable amount for a guy who still can become a good role player in this league.
Yeah, I think it's a great system too. They've got Tabo there, I think could help him a lot, and they've got Budenholzer, who's a great coach. I mean, that's a pretty good place to play, the Hawks. I mean, I know Zach Lowe is a big fan of LeBron going there. They got Horford, they got Millsap, but you know, it's a fun little team, probably 4 seed in the East around there.
The Hawks are such a weird team because like nobody ever seems to think about them and talk about them, but really, you know, like they've got some really underrated guys. I think Horford is perennially underrated.
Yeah,
Millsap is perennially underrated, and both of those guys people consider as too small for their positions, which I don't even think is true. It's a strange little team that people seem to forget about.
Yeah, Horford, I think, just has injury problems year in and year out.
Right.
It seems.
And we're familiar with that as well. So I feel for the Atlanta fans. So really, the only thing that we've seen on our side is the Sean Livingston signing. I know that we've talked about that endlessly the last couple of weeks. Evan, any new thoughts on Livingston?
You know, I basically think, I mean, when I started thinking about the cap, really the last few days, like, you know, basically scenarios where we don't get Love, what has to happen? I think my only question is, do we get through this season with the cap flexibility to be able to add someone like Millsap or Marc Gasol? You know, there's going to be some free agents this summer. Is that what we're planning to do? And, you know, basically we have Curry, Bogut, Iggy at around $37 million. So the question is, you know, you can, it's like we saw with Houston, like you can sign one of these free agents and then re-sign Clay and Draymond. So my only question is whether we keep Livingston or do we need to dump him, or it, you know, once you go into the luxury tax, right, you can't even sign an MLE. So my only thought was, you know, he might be our last mid-level guy, or at least the mini mid-level or taxpayer exception one,
yeah.
The $3 million.
Yes,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, this potentially Livingston could be the last mid-level guy for quite some time. I mean, there really wasn't anybody else. There wasn't a stretch for basically Mick Roberts. I mean, so like, I guess I'll just go on record. If we could have gotten Mick Roberts, that would have been my pick. I don't really care so much about having a guy who can run the second unit. That's what I keep hearing, like he's going to run the second unit, because that's sort of thinking of Mark Jackson's team and what we needed then. And in this, you know, with Kerr, it's not going to be about guys dribbling around all the time. It's going to be about passing. It's going to be about running, which actually Livingston, you know, I think will be good with that. I just really think going forward, you know, you need to stretch the floor, and we don't do that. I mean, we have David Lee, who doesn't shoot any three-pointers. Draymond and Barnes shot below 35% last season. Basically, if you look at the Warriors, they have turned into, like, the complete opposite of what they were just a few years ago. We've basically become a defensive juggernaut. And aside from Klay and Curry, nobody else can shoot the ball, really. You know, they're okay shooters, but you look at San Antonio, it seems like everybody on that team can shoot the ball.
Well, do you think that there's a chance that that both Barnes and Green become better three-point shooters? I mean, the trajectory, at least for Green, is up. According to Kerr, assuming they don't get another stretch four, which really they came into the off season, that seemed like number one priority for Myers, and they weren't able to get that guy yet. And so Kerr today, talking on KMBR, was indicating that both Barnes and Green would be playing stretch four quite a bit. So I'm sure he envisions them shooting threes. And, you know, 35%, if they can hover around that, 36, 37, obviously, that's great. I don't think that 35% is really going to hurt them. It's going to help them. It's going to stretch the floor if they're playing four and moving Lee to the center position, like they're likely going to have to do quite a bit this season.
I think if Draymond can shoot 36%, which is what McRoberts shot last season, if Draymond can shoot 36%, then we're golden. Then he probably should start.
Andy, what do you think?
We should start regardless, right, Evan?
I mean, actually, honestly, why wouldn't I, at this point, why wouldn't you bring Lee off the bench? Like,
well, no. I'm with you.
There's gonna be a lot of Lee Draymond 4-5. Next season. I mean, that's clear. And, you know, and I think this is Lee's last season, so I don't care if he gets pissed off. Like, I think he's a professional. He's not, you know, he'll do whatever the team wants him to do. I hope they shoot threes. I was a little bit scared of what Kerr was talking about yesterday with Barnes having a chance to start. That just, like, came out of left field, and I don't know what he was talking about. Kerr basically said he'll be vying for a starting position, and he played better last season when he was a stretch four. I didn't know what that meant. Is he, like, would he start over Draymond and Lee at the four, or was he saying that he's going to start over Iguodala at small four? Like, I don't know. You guys saw that, right?
Yeah, I wasn't. I'm not too worried about it because I don't know what else he would have said in that case. Is he going to say no? He's, you know, there's no chance he starts, and then if they, you know, that's going to hurt his trade value. I don't know. It potentially hurt his confidence even more than it's been hurt. I just think that's the kind of comment that you can't read too much into at this point in the off season. And I certainly hope that's the case because, you know, clearly starting over Iguodala is not acceptable. Hey, maybe he knows something that we don't, and he knows that Klay is going to be going. You know, then you move Iguodala to the two, and then that three position is open. It's open for a contest. How about that, guys?
No, but still, Draymond would be the starting three in my book.
Well, no, mine too, certainly. But at least it's a little more of a competition between those two than it would be between Barnes and Iguodala, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, it's just, it's been weird with ever since Kerr's been hired. It's been weird the way they've been going about bringing up Klay untouchable in a love trade and then trying to boost Harrison Barnes' confidence. I don't know. I've been the Barnes backer for, you know, last year, throughout about half of last year. But if you're to the point where you lose confidence in your ability just because somebody says you're probably not better than Andre Iguodala, who's a defensive first team $11 million guy? I mean, should you even?
Yeah,
I don't know. It's,
no, it's a good point. It feels odd, and maybe Kerr even would have taken that back and said, no, there's no way he's starting. But, you know, it's an off-the-cuff comment during Summer League, right? So I'm not going to read too much into it, and I'm going to assume that he's going to have this huge bounce back, and he's going to you know, be the player that we all thought he would be, which hopefully, if, you know, Evan probably thought he was going to be Jarrell Wright, which I think is actually a decent comparison at this point in his career.
That would be nice.
That wouldn't be so bad, right?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, and just to go back to Livingston kind of before we get out of here, I do think that coming into the offseason, we were looking at the two biggest needs were a shooter, hopefully at the four, and a backup point guard that could actually handle the ball and not just be a complete mess. And I think that clearly that Myers was looking at Fry to start the offseason, and based on the contract that Fry was looking for and eventually got, maybe stretch fours were just too expensive. I mean, with Mick Roberts aside, there wasn't really anything else that was presenting itself as a good opportunity right away, and so Myers went after the backup point guard before somebody else could jump to it. And I wonder if that's that was definitely a strategy to get something done very early, kind of like Masai Ujiri in Toronto, deciding to, you know, he just kind of realized that we're not playing a part in any of these big free agency signings. Let's just go out and do all of our stuff as quickly as possible. So, you know, the Lowry thing happened really fast. Those other signings that we talked about earlier in Toronto actually made some really good moves, kind of under-the-radar moves, without being part of the LeBron dominoes. And so I'm wondering if that in part is why we saw Livingston get snatched up relatively early in the process.
Yeah, I mean, better Livingston than Darren Collison, right?
Right.
I think they got kind of screwed over, too. I mean, I feel like the trade exception something might have gone down. But it's just the whole LeBron thing kind of just messed with them.
No, so actually, I think that's a good point, Andy. The trade exception, I just don't think it. You know, if you looked at Nate's post yesterday, I mean, basically it would have had to be an expiring contract under $6 million, you know, because of the luxury tax, and we don't want to hold another contract going into next summer. And it's not like, you know, you need a team that is dumping a contract. Like, I just don't think it's to me, it's sort of a red herring. Like, I didn't see it as a big deal either way.
Well, it was still a chip that they had to, he had to hold on to, right, instead of using that up earlier in the process. So somebody, I think it was probably Feltbot on Twitter today, asked whether the Warriors could have gotten Isaiah Thomas for the contract that he signed with the Suns. And they would have had to use the traded player exception earlier before they used the mid-level. And I think that potentially
they could have done that.
I don't think they could have. I think is the point is if they had used that that much of the traded player exception early, then I think that they would have gone enough closer to the luxury tax line that they wouldn't have been able to use their mid-level exception anymore. I'm not certain about that. I think at least it would have shrunk to the apron, which is like $4 million above the luxury tax line, I believe. Mm-hmm. But we should probably get a capologist on the next podcast.
Oh man, listeners are
so
juiced.
So was his point that we could have made an offer to Thomas?
That was the question, whether we could have. And
I don't, but you can't. I thought you can't trade the exception and, you know, whatever. Like, it's like a separate thing. And I don't.
Well, we couldn't have made an offer. It would have been trading the traded player exception, essentially doing what the Suns did. The Suns sent a traded player exception to the Kings, essentially.
Wow.
For Isaiah Thomas.
If that's true, yeah, I'm totally agree with him. We should have done that. If that's possible.
Whether Isaiah Thomas is a better fit for the Warriors than Livingston, I think is a healthy debate. I think he's a better player overall, for sure. There are the defensive questions that people do bring up. And like you said, he was a good defender, at least against Curry. I'm not sure about the numbers, but...
he's a lot younger.
And he's a lot younger. He, you know, one thing is that he doesn't offer the versatility that Livingston does, and I think that's one of the reasons as well that that he was a decent pickup because he can defend three positions and potentially play on the offensive end, tall enough to go in the post as well. So he does have some versatility that Thomas doesn't. But I think you're right. You said this earlier in the offseason that Isaiah Thomas is going to end up being the steal of the offseason. The numbers that he signed for look pretty good. And like you said, the Suns are super scary now. I don't want to play them, and we're going to have to four times a year.
Yeah. Yep. Well, before we go, looks like Pau Gasol just signed with the Bulls.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah. I heard it here first.
Yeah, so, I guess he's not in the West, so it works out a little bit better.
No, but it takes Bulls out of any love.
Right.
Right.
Well, likely we'll see Carmelo back in New York then. It seems, unless he ends up making his way to LA. But seems like Carmelo back to New York. And
so he didn't want to go to Houston?
I think that was really early on. There was discussion about that, and as far as I could tell, they moved on very quickly to Bosch.
Yeah. Okay.
Under the assumption that for whatever reason he didn't want to play there. I don't know if that's actually the case or not. Maybe he doesn't like Dwight Howard, which really wouldn't surprise me very much.
Oh, one more thing I thought would be just real quick. Remember we were all into David Blatt. That guy hit the lottery, right?
He's the winner of the offseason so far.
I mean, are you kidding me? He first time coach and he gets LeBron James. It's like, Phil Jackson right there. But we ended up okay. And Gentry's a good coach, so
yeah.
I think he'll be running a lot of the show.
Yeah, the staff kind of shaped up. We don't know what Kerr's going to look like yet, but Gentry's a good coach, and we've seen him before. Ron Adams is supposedly a very good defensive coach as well, and the inimitable Luke Walton. looking forward to seeing him on the bench this year.
I heard he has a great tan, so someone's taking up for the Beedrins legend.
All right, guys, this has gone long. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up. The podcast is moved. We used to put these up at soundcloud.com. I may still be uploading them there, but for the most part, we're now living at Blog Talk Radio, which SB Nation many of the SB Nation blogs are up at Blog Talk Radio. So check us out at blogtalkradio.com/Golden State of Mind. We'll be back on the podcast soon, but check, of course, goldstateofmind.com for future updates. Thanks again to Andy and Evan, and we'll talk to you soon. Till next time.
To spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 429, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.